This podcast is brought to you by LMU Munich.
But in my collaborations with chemists and so toxicologists actually over the past decade, it's always struck me that we have very interesting sort of correspondences, I suppose, in terms of the way we understand things. So the guys I worked with in Sri Lanka on sort of pesticide poisoning spoke about this culture of poison, which they couldn't understand, but which basically I could then, you know, sort of explore. You know, and that's sort of gone into interesting discussions about what can you do to stop people from taking poisons? What kinds of containment can pesticides be sort of put in to stop them killing? And this sort of, I think, is interesting, goes back to the idea that things kill. Well, yes, pesticides definitely kill. But also they could sort of, you know, create, as well, and they're part of an interesting assemblage. It's not a word I've used before particularly. But it seems to be very unfashionable in this room. I don't know. I was sort of trained at the LSE. We don't speak about that stuff basically anyway, so it didn't really, doesn't fuck, you know. Not that fast. This sort of thing of the talk I wanted to give, and I'm like I say, the sort of carefully timed talk has been stuck on my PC in Durham, so I'm going to have to go over things. But just to give you an idea of what I wanted to speak about, was this expanding interest in anthropology and chemicals, which has been very much coming up because people are interested in things like Bhopal and Chernobyl, but also the everyday sort of exposures that we are sort of coming to terms with. There is talk of a chemical turn in anthropology, yet another turn. I think we're now back to functionalism, actually. That's about four turns, so assuming they're all in the same direction, we're back at Malinowski. What I'm interested in this chemical turn is that the kind of stuff that's being discussed was exactly the stuff that was interesting people like Kant in the back in the 18th century, but also people like sort of these sorts of social philosophers of the same period. And the kinds of problems they encountered, I mean, they basically decided that speaking in terms of chemicals and trying to equate sort of society to chemicals and the operations of chemicals was entirely sort of stupid, basically. It was very kind of esoteric. Which didn't really explain, you know, things at all. The sort of contemporary sort of chemical turners, unfortunately, seem to be sort of going in the same direction. So I'm interested in thinking, okay, well, if we're trying to find a way of speaking about chemicals and engagement with chemistry, what should we do? So that would be the final part of my talk. Why was I interested in pesticides anyway? Well, I mean, they're one of these things that, of course, are always discussed in the news. They span the spectrum of political debates. They're considered essential to feed the world, and I kind of agree with that on some kind of level. But, of course, at the other end, we are talking about perhaps the destruction of bees, as was discussed yesterday, and the destruction of the planet. certainly extensive pollution and contamination of the environment. Why are they interesting? Well, as things, as substances, as commodities, as sort of technologies, pesticides are engaged with by different groups in quite different kinds of ways. You can explore pesticides from a lot of different theoretical angles. A lot of interesting past working anthropology. I've found an absolute delight going back, for example, to sort of Douglas's work on purity and danger. Before the work that she did, which was actually about pesticides, but the kind of discussion around symbolism, taboo, and so on, it's all a very fertile kind of ground. Why Sri Lanka? Well, I mean, there are significant benefits of pesticides, and I think it's very difficult to say there aren't. As a post-colonial society, which was desperate to cut food coming in from elsewhere to balance international payments, pesticides promoted the production of staples, and they still do. But also, they've caused a lot of problems. People swallowing them, for starters. Perhaps a sort of contemporary problem of kidney failure in the farming areas, and so on. The project involved very much follow the thing sort of approach, which is very problematic because, of course, it did imply there was a start and an end to the kind of chain that I sort of investigated. But simply as a matter of practicality, as an individual trying to do this, I started off in the industry, going around business conferences, training seminars. I recently took a course in pesticide spraying and now I'm a qualified pesticide sprayer, so if this kind of anthropology thing doesn't work out, I've always got something else to do. Going down the chain to Sri Lanka to sort of speak to farmers and activists, and so on. Now, so I was doing this project alongside this wider theoretical turn, this sort of chemical turn in anthropology. It's quite popular in the States. It's not so much spread over to the UK or to other countries yet, but I think it's probably poised. It's one of these quite fashionable things. People in this area are quite inspired by what chemicals do. What's interesting about chemicals as an anthropologist? What can you, the ways in which chemicals as things that can't be seen in terms of their effects, but as saturating the sort of planet, saturating our bodies, make us start to think about the connections between and the connections inside in different kinds of ways. Much of this work, and I think this is one of the problems with the language and sort of semantics, which is why I agree that words can often be taken too sort of far. Much of this work takes the extreme sort of science that's being done, which, you know, suggests that exposure to chemicals is cutting sperm counts, is creating problems in the fetus, and so, you know, basically our ideas are sort of sort of sex and sort of gender are being sort of chemically changed and altered. Really taking that idea as if this is something that's sort of going on. When speaking to chemists and biologists and so on, well, you know, lots, you know, basically actually quite sort of careful about, you know, about these kinds of ideas. But in the chemical terms kind of arguments, there is an attempt to start to argue that we have to start to think chemically, because chemicals, you know, basically are fundamentally changing our bodies, our communities, beyond a kind of political context, but into a very sort of biological, it's going to change the species kind of context. So lots of the work goes off in that kind of direction, and it uses lots of very Foucauldian ideas to kind of mesh a sort of biopolitics with a sort of chemopolitics and a sort of embodied biological experience. It's often quite indistinct where they're trying to sort of draw the distinction between simply pulling chemical terminology to describe the world that has been saturated, to using chemical terminology in its actual sense. And I think this is quite a problematic area, which again was encountered in the original chemical turn back in the 19th century. I'm going to have to speed up because I've only got a few minutes left. So as I sort of flagged at the start, there were all of these ideas going, basically being shared and discussed before. In this case, it was about the idea that, well, what can you do to explain the fact that as individuals we all do things, but as a society that sort of perpetuates over time, we also have this kind of idea of something that's apart, that's also sort of separate. So just as chemical compounds are constituted by different chemicals, which basically on their own, you know, have got distinct sort of properties, if you combine them, it creates a different kind of compound with sort of distinct properties. Well, you know, society was explained in the same kind of way. Most famously by sort of Durkheim, especially in the first part, I suppose, of his career, and especially the work on suicide, interestingly enough, where the idea that suicide as a social fact is pushed along through social currents, which really operate on us in a very similar kind of way to the physico sort of chemical forces. Now, this kind of sort of terminology didn't really catch on with Durkheim. What did catch on was the more physical kind of language, which Durkheim also had used. So, you know, concepts of structure and integration and so on. A lot of this sort of stuff was much more in the much more a reflection of physics and sort of biology, which of the sciences have tended to sort of dominate. Chemistry, interestingly, you know, has always been sort of the outlier in, you know, basically in a sense. That kind of terminology really sort of caught on, and we sort of forgot the chemical kind of stuff that was there. So today's language, today's kind of activities, you know, in the chemical turn, I think are trying to do quite a lot of the same stuff, but they're also encountering the same problems in terms of, okay, well, what is this? Is this just a language? Is this an actual description of chemical processes? So it's anthropology and chemistry, or of chemistry. It was an interesting tension, I think, which is one I'm sort of grappling with in the book. Materialities and connectivities seem to be a very interesting way of trying to think about this. You know, in a very sort of general sense, basically anthropologists and chemists are trying to do the same kind of thing. We're trying to understand still the way that the small particles of society creates some kind of an overriding structure through time, which we describe through all kinds of things, including assemblages. But we also have this idea of scale. So in chemistry, there's the microcosm and the macrocosm, which was exactly that kind of description. The sense that what goes on in the body is a direct correspondence to what goes on in the climate and so on. So this idea that scale didn't change what you were talking about per se. It's at this point where I would turn into a discussion of the Sri Lankan context, but I'm running out of time quite rapidly. The work I was doing in Sri Lanka was trying to come up with ways of putting together the different kinds of approaches that have been explored to explain why in Sri Lanka there is such a problem with sort of suicide. Very traditionally, the idea has been in terms of the breakdown of society, the breakdown of structure, the idea of a physical sort of problem. Toxicologists came at the problem quite differently, and they were very interested in the fact that the problem of suicide correlates with the sort of spread of pesticides in the country. So pesticides were introduced at this point and then banned at this point, and the death rate came down substantially. Which kind of really complicates this idea that, well, you've got social change and social sort of turbulence in this period, but then, okay, well, why has it suddenly come down here? So this seems to be a very interesting argument, and the sort of toxicologists have now basically argued that, well, you ban pesticides and you've solved the problem, which to me was always a very sort of theoretical kind of explanation. I was interested in exploring a bit more deeply. What toxicologists were also doing, though, were exploring the idea that chemicals are affecting the brain of people in Sri Lanka, and they're turning them towards impulsive acts, which would cause them to sort of commit suicide. And there does seem to be some kind of evidence, though I'm quite suspicious of it, that this is the case. Interestingly, I will have to end on this slide and just leave it as a sort of suspending sort of moment. But interestingly, kind of in terms of folk toxicology in the island and so on, there's a very similar kind of explanation. The exposure to pesticides disrupts the doses, excites the sort of doses in the body, which also causes people to kill themselves. Where I would have gone on is to then suggest that exploring toxicological ideas is a very interesting way of sidestepping this problem of the kind of way that you can talk about chemicals. I'm not suggesting the imposition of a chemical terminology, but finding the terminology through the encounter of these two approaches to poison. Thank you very much, and apologies, I ran out of time.
We go now to the second paper, Professor Dilip Stockhammer, Berlin Uni.